Big Five time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
So I suppose this is a tease for later in the week, but I read that you had shut it down for the weekend, or at least on Sunday, and you're watching lots of movies.
I did.
I did not. I was out a lot.
Okay.
And something hit me on Friday night. I had some Jersey pals in town.
Okay.
And they were like, yeah, let's meet up for dinner.
Was one Lenny Dykstra?
No, it wasn't Dykstra.
Okay.
No, not Dykstra.
Making sure.
Driver, this Uber.
And I always feel a lot of pressure when folks are like, hey, let's go get something to eat. Where do we go?
Me too. You know, I have the one place I try to take everyone, but it's often crowded. It's tough to get in there, and you know, not everybody wants to go to very crowded places.
Yes. So I gave them options. I gave them some good options. They actually chose Italian, which I was shocked at.
Okay.
I was a little worried because folks on the East Coast can be real snobby about Italian and pizza.
I know. Did you tell them the options are Chinese, Italian, blank, 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 or did you say names of places and say this is your option?
Oh, I described the food.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like steak joint, Mexican, here's a couple Italian places, here's a bar with 900 items,
okay.
Anything you want. They chose Italian.
Did you decide to go to the place that we discussed?
I have no idea what we discussed. But anyway, we went to a place on the east side, and it was very good. They liked it. They had a loud singer, so it worked out. But on the drive over, the one of the guys was like, yeah, we went and got Italian last night. We went over to, and I'll mention it, the Italian-American Club. And you know, I've been here for 20-whatever years now, 25 years.
Don't tell me you've never been there.
I've never been there.
Wow.
And I've been dying to go lately because Al Bernstein keeps, you know, doing his singing gig over there. But I have not had a chance to go over there. But that doesn't excuse 25 years. 22 years, whatever it is now. Coming up on 23. What a mope I am. Get it together.
Well, especially people coming from out of town that know to go there and you don't.
I know. That's why I was embarrassed.
Did they know because of the Grant Thompson, Brett Okamoto thing?
Probably not. No, okay. It's such an inside reference that you just wasted 5 seconds and we can never get back. I mean, it's such an old story. But then I thought to myself, there are actually a lot of places around Vegas that I have not been to. Like, different sites. I actually have never been here to Ethel M. And could I live closer to this place? Back in, like, yeah, I think it was like 98. I live right down the road. Right down the road.
You know, it's more of a thing, like, As somebody growing up here, like, this was definitely, like, a spot. Like, you definitely come here. And so I think, like, locals know it, and they get it, and they know how, like, awesome it is. But I think you're right. When you move here as an adult, you might not know all the, like, institutional places to go hang out at.
Well, it got me thinking, because a guy named John Acuff, I don't know who he is, we've been in Nashville for almost 9 years, live 15 minutes away from the iconic Bluebird Cafe, and haven't ever gone. What's something classic you haven't done in your city?
I will say, I mean...
Have you been to Red Rock?
Of course.
Okay. I've never been to Red Rock.
No, I will say, I will...
I'm shocked that you've been to Red Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're such an outdoors person.
You're right.
But you have been here for...
Way too long. Yes. I will say, I have never, and it's on purpose, taken a picture in front of the Las Vegas sign.
Really?
I never would and never will.
What's your problem?
That's a tourist thing.
What about the relatively new Las Vegas sign right in front of the Strat? An alternate.
I like that one a lot better because it's more of like a downtown thing.
It's got a showgirl.
And you know, I'm the downtown kid, so that's more my style.
I've never been to the top of the Strat.
What?
I know.
How is that even possible?
I know.
That's insane to me. That is completely insane.
Everyone has a spot in their city. One of the answers was from someone who lives in New York, and they're like, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty.
Wow. Again, I mean, I guess I can see that's another, it's a touristy type thing, and you might not want to go there as a local. You would think at some point somebody would have come to town, and you're like, yeah, I got to go take you there.
You think?
That it is bizarre to me that you've never been to the top of the stratosphere.
Can we name 50 places in a row that Chrissy hasn't been to yet?
Oh, yeah. Las Vegas.
Hey. I know you take a left out of the parking lot to get to Las Vegas.
No, you don't. You take a right.
Or right. I could get there either way, Adam.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I could.
I guess you could if you take a left and then go on 215.
Yep,
loop around.
You're welcome.
Oh, is that the way you go?
Yeah.
No, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm going to guess that she had never been to the MGM before Saturday.
False. I threw up at the MGM one time.
Okay. You got us. I guess we can't do 50 in a row.
Yeah, so how about that?
Have you been to the top of Stratosphere?
No, but it is on my list because I hear that you can just, like, dangle.
Wait, what?
Like, there's different rides up there.
There are rides,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant you're just going to, like, hang off the edge.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I probably won't go that crazy, but that is on my list. I'm excited to do that. Chrissy's you guys want to come?
Chrissy's never been to Red Rock either.
Red Rock Canyon
the canyon.
Or the casino.
No, false. I've been to the latter. I don't go outside very often. So.
Well, Chrissy's neighborhood is also scary. Or that was an old neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she just tries to hunker down and stay inside.
You get me, Adam. Thank you.
All right, next up.
Number 4.
What were the best things you saw about the AAF, this new league? Debuted this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Got pretty good ratings on Saturday. Sunday, the last game kind of faded. Got like a 0.4 on NFL Network. But overall, returns were mostly positive.
I mean, I love the two-point conversion rule.
What is the rule?
That you always have to go for two.
No extra points, no kickoffs.
I love the onside kick rule more than anything, which is instead of trying an onside kick, you can elect to go for it on 4th and 12 from your own 28. Although right. I saw...
What are the rules, though? You have to be down by 17, so you can actually do it. Like, if you're getting blown out in the second quarter, you can do it. Or if you're behind by any amount in the – I wonder if it's a touchdown. Whatever. When you're behind in the final 5 minutes, you can do it. But you get the ball on your own 28, it's a 4th and 12.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you could do it any time. I would say you go for it every time.
No. You have to be behind by 17 or final 5 minutes trailing. Yeah, they're not going to let you imagine.
Yeah, just do it all the time.
You just always do it and just screw it.
Let them have the ball in field goal range. I don't care. I'm going to try to get the ball. I'm going to try to keep it. I like that. It's just more, you know, it's different things to kind of draw you in. I didn't like that I saw a celebration penalty. That made me annoyed.
Oh, God. Was it really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
It's so stupid. Now, this is clearly, as we pointed out in hour one, a partnership with the NFL. The NFL is going to try things out in this league.
Yep.
Clearly, the players are trying out. But they're going to try rules. The whole kicking thing is to get rid of kicks, period.
Yeah.
In the NFL. Although, do you want to get rid of field goals?
I mean, I would love it.
I think
you need to have them.
I think they have to remain around to entice people to make the wrong move. It's such a big point of debate now in football if you go for a field goal basically inside your own 30, inside of the opposing 30.
Right.
And, you know, 4th and 1, 4th and 2, 4th and 3, just go for it.
I would almost never kick.
Right. But you need to have it there to have some sort of strategic decision.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think, you know, there is an element of – there's interesting, you know, do you kick a 60-yarder late in the game to – you know, that you could win it if the guy makes it, but more likely you give the other team the ball midfield. Like, those kind of decisions are interesting, and there's times when, you know, field goal can win or lose the game. I think, you know, you need to keep those around.
I want to know more about the Sky Judge thing. They've added an extra official. The official's job is to make reviews, but I don't know what's reviewable and what's not reviewable. This is Sky Judge Lady on a touchdown that was called not a touchdown on the field. I mean, it's interesting. She's mic'd up, and she takes you through the whole process, and in the middle of it, she changes her mind.
When the ball hits the ground, I'm going to let this stand.
Terry Valenti, the replay official.
He's rolling on the ground. He's using the ground to keep it in there. The ground helps him. We're going to let it stand.
So she's going to agree with the call on the field. No touchdown. She feels that the ground helped the catch at the end of the catch.
Definitely touched. Ball is down on the ground sliding. Okay, we're gonna wait a minute, 1 second. We've got an elbow down. It's got it and touched. Nope, we're gonna overturn this and reverse this to a catch in the end zone for a score by Orlando. He's got possession. He tucks it in. His elbow hits. The ball is in control in his arms.
Okay.
We've got a score.
I'm not sure this mic'd up thing is going to be a good idea.
I
mean, I like it.
It's a great idea for the viewer and for the fans and for us. It's awesome. For the officials, it is a disaster. It is going to be a disaster. It's 100% a train wreck that if they bring it to the NFL, which I hope they do, it will be a disaster in every way possible. But I love it. It's great for us. We're going to be debating this, talking about this all the time. Every Monday, the whole show can just be playing audio of officials sounding like complete morons. Because they are. And we've always known they are. And this is what it is. This is what they're doing up there.
They're trying to fix it. She righted or wrong.
Trying to be more...
Her first...
I don't know what was... It's supposed to be inconclusive, or supposed to be conclusive. If it's inconclusive, you can't change anything. She has no idea. She's like, "Yep, we're gonna go and let this stand." Well, no, maybe. You know, a touchdown. Like, it immediately just like, no, I changed my mind. And I just feel like it's that all the time. Every suspicion we've ever had about how dumb officials are is going to be completely validated by this.
But that's part of the process, is looking at multiple videos and seeing different angles.
But she
and
was
changing
so sure it was incomplete, and then so sure it was complete that quickly.
Well, what'd she say at the end? That's the final answer.
Okay, but is it conclusive if you changed your mind halfway through it?
I get your point, though. With that sky judge mic'd up, people are just going to tear them apart
for
being indecisive.
Bad. It's so bad, but so great.
Top three stories.
Number three.
All right, big news of the day. The A's. It appears they lose Kyler Murray. And I want to get this correct on his bonus money. So he had a forfeit, $1.3 million. On March 1st, he forfeits the rest of the bonus. He has to forfeit another $3 million. So the entire bonus is gone if he's sticking with the NFL after March 1st.
That will be I mean, it is another decision to be made.
It's kind of the drop dead date.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what happens with the bonus, because I know at that point the A's then put him on a restricted list, and they have the rights to Kyler Murray. Yeah. But if you don't know who Kyler Murray is, obviously Heisman Trophy winner, Oklahoma quarterback, undersized dude, had a guaranteed deal with baseball, was a top 10 pick in the MLB draft, was thought to be 99% going to play baseball. Was just, you know, hey, one more year of college football. Let's see how it goes at Oklahoma. He was awesome, but he is tiny. And he's decided to roll the dice and have baseball wait, and he's going to the draft.
Yeah, I still don't know. I mean, he has to make a definitive statement that he's all in for football if he's going to pursue the draft process. Because if he comes out and says, you know what, I'm still deciding, I'm going to go through this process, let's see what happens, you're basically telling all NFL teams not to draft you.
Well, to do that, he's going to have to, March 1st will be the second
right
forfeiture of money. When he does that, that's all in. That's all in.
Yeah, although I'm sure he can just go back to the A's and say, hey, you know what, I want that back. And I'm sure they would do it.
But hopefully he's more forthcoming. Hey, Chrissy, this is going like 2 weeks back. See if you can find the audio of the weird Dan Patrick interview. Did you see him go on Dan Patrick for the Super Bowl or around the Super Bowl that week?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't answer anything. And
because I don't think he knows.
Well, he doesn't. He didn't know at the time. And he kept looking at his dad. And his dad's like, yeah, we don't know. We can't give an answer. Like, why are you doing interviews? But it was in conjunction with, I don't know, who knows, insurance company or something. Yeah, it was utter confusion. He better know what he's doing with the NFL. Here's the other thing. Scott Boras, his rep in baseball, can't rep him in football. Do you know that?
No.
Boras is not licensed to be an NFL agent. And
I'm sure he has a partner that is.
Possibly. But he
like
actually,
the Rock.
He can't, yeah, right? He can't actually get licensed until I think the next round is July 1st. Yeah, July 1st.
So he'll just have like some associate do it and then get licensed and
yes,
take over.
We'll have to look into it.
I can't imagine Boras letting him go
and not making any money off
right
of it after he already got him a bonus.
So when he got the bonus, he got some of the money. Did he have to pay a percentage to Boras? I'm sure he did. And like, how could he get that back if he has to pay it back?
Ooh, that's a good point. Does Boras lose his money? I would be certain that's not the case.
No chance. Zero chance. But as far as Murray goes in that interview, like it just goes to everything that I said. Like, they are not committed to football. They're not. I believe from the beginning this was a ploy to get the A's to pay, and the A's are notoriously cheap, and we know what they would do. That is the one caveat for the baseball stuff when we say, well, if you're going to make it in baseball, you're going to do a lot better than you would if you make it in football. But the guaranteed money is there in football. The problem is the A's will mess with you. They've traditionally messed with prospects. They hold them back from putting them up to stop their clock. They do a lot of different things to make sure that they keep their payroll low and don't pay guys. So you are in the wrong organization if you're trying to determine, you know, what you're going to do with your future. The A's are a factor in what you're going to do.
There was that weird exchange with Kyler Murray and DP.
Somebody?
I don't know.
Well, wait, Dad, is he going to the combine?
No comment.
Dad had no comment there. Pro day?
I mean, that's after the combine.
Yeah, are you going to do a pro day? Yeah? Yeah.
I guess if you want to say yeah, I guess, yeah, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, it's okay. You can have a pro day. But
would imply that I was going to play football.
Okay.
Yeah, it was weird. He just wouldn't answer, and he was mumbling, and Patrick actually got to a point where he's like, all right, come on, answer. Let's go.
Kyler Gray.
You're killing my show here. Pulling a Jim Gray.
Yeah.
When do you report for the Oakland A's?
February 15th.
Oh, you knew that. Okay. So you're ready to go to do that. Wait, are you going to spring training?
Wouldn't answer.
I don't know.
Wait, you don't know? Dad, is he going to spring training? Another no comment here. You know these microphones are on right now. That's weird.
Yeah, I know, okay.
I just said. All right. How tough is it that you're doing this with Gatorade, but you know every place you go is going to ask you the same questions?
I'm getting pretty good at answering, you know, these questions.
No, you're not answering them.
Well, exactly.
You're shaking me off here.
Yeah,
no. I feel like I'm trying to tackle you.
No, yeah, everybody keeps asking the same questions.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they'll soon be answered.
They are answered. Well, that was a nightmare, wasn't it?
They're still not answered.
Patrick's like, you know, you're not. You're actually not good at answering.
I'm getting pretty good at it.
Yeah, you're not. There's
no
answer.
You're not.
Now, top two stories.
Number two.
Boy, what was that on Saturday? That was rough. UNLV. We'll get to the rough evening in town with VGK, but UNLV against Fresno.
I've never seen somebody so fascinated by something as that lady was with the chocolate fountain.
The chocolate fountain? It is kind of fascinating.
No, it's 100% fascinating, and I guess
was
I've had...
staring at it?
I've had like 2 hours... Not staring at it. Her face was like on the glass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she loved it. It was great. But I've had 2 hours to look at it and be intrigued.
She looks super intense now. She's talking to her daughter. She's like, I want a fountain like that at home. What do you mean? No.
Don't we all?
Where's my fountain? That's not what she was saying.
I would definitely put that in my house.
But I hope that's what she was saying. And her daughter's like, all right, Mom, I'll get you a fountain.
She probably was.
See if we can get that one.
That'd be a tough one to try to carry out of here.
Yeah.
It's kind of big.
A little pricey.
Yeah.
A lot of size. Need a big room to house that one.
It's impressive.
So UNLV loses by 18 against Fresno State. It was a chance to move into a tie for third place. What'd you make of it? Fresno shot the lights out.
Yeah. Well,
from three. Their two best players went 10 of 17 from three. Braxton Huggins and Deshaun Taylor. And again, the Rebels lose by 18.
They shot the lights out, and, you know, sometimes you can watch a really good shooting performance like that and just say, wow, they just made shots. There's nothing you could do. I thought a lot of the threes that Fresno made were just bad defense. I thought there was times, and this was a huge issue for UNLV last year. They've cleaned it up to some degree at times this year, but this was the UNLV perimeter defense of last year. I thought there was times where certain guys, they just backed off. There was one notable one from Sam Bittner early or about midway through the first half where they just didn't play him.
Which is inexcusable. Bittner, a Vegas guy, is now in his second year of shooting exactly 48% from three.
Yeah.
Shot's weird, isn't it? Corkscrew. But he makes them. You can't let him shoot threes. Nor can you leave Huggins open. You can't leave Taylor open.
Yeah.
It's a cardinal sin if you're going under the screen. That's a freaking disaster. And the other thing Marvin Menzies pointed out after the game is several of those threes came in offensive transition where it was just so quick and they couldn't locate the man and they were wide open for a three.
And that was the other one I was going to get to where, you know, they backed off some guys. They got lost on screens, as you mentioned, but I thought the biggest issue that they had was losing guys in transition where you're getting back on defense, you're trying to stop the ball. That's priority one, of course, but you can't just allow two guys – to run to each you know wing and just set up at the three-point line and not pick up either one of them and have Fresno State have their choice of which guy they want to basically shoot a wide open three. That was troubling. That was something you watch and say that needs to be fixed now. That has to get fixed immediately. You can't allow that to happen. And you see if you know sometimes you get lucky and you leave guys open and they miss, but if a team is shooting well like Fresno was, you just can't let them have those kind of opportunities over and over again, and that's what UNLV did, and they paid the price big time.
The other interesting story from the game was Huggins, a former player at New Mexico State. He was recruited to Las Cruces by Marvin Menzies. He's a senior transfer. He landed at Fresno. It's from Bakersfield. You know, you love Bakersfield, but 100 miles away from Fresno. The question was asked of Marvin Menzies after the game, hey, did you consider or did Huggins reach out to you to transfer to UNLV? And Marvin Menzies explained, hey, he wanted to go home, basically.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Huggins?
We talked to him at the paper.
Okay.
He basically no commented, but it was no commented in a way that was, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. There was definitely some animosity about how he was feeling about the situation. That he didn't think, if he was recruited, he wasn't recruited hard, and he wasn't made to think that he was wanted. And, you know, sometimes that's can certainly be the case where you have a guy and, hey, we'll take you, but it's not going to be our recruiting priority. We're not going to, you know, push over the top to get you. You know, if you want to come here, that's fine. And I think a lot of times that's, you know, that's a communication thing between a player wants you to – there's certain guys that want you to call them every day and talk to them every day and really woo them. And there's other guys that are like, all right, you let me know that you wanted me. All right, let me think about that. And you know, different guys have different desires from how they want to be recruited. And it seemed like he really wanted to be wooed, and UNLV really wasn't interested in doing that.
Well, as it turns out, it's a massive win for Justin Hudson, the former UNLV assistant, former San Diego State assistant. I'm not talking about the game itself, but getting Huggins.
Yeah.
He's third in the conference in scoring at like 19.6 a game. He's shooting over 40% from three. I mean, he's one of the best players in the conference.
No question.
He would have been a nice player on UNLV.
Yes, they could have definitely used him. Although, there's a lot of guys. Nobody is putting up that kind of production, but there's kind of similar guys that UNLV has in a way. But he would have definitely been playing. There's no question about it.
And that's the argument. You know, do you go for short-term fixes and possibly take away development of your sophomores, your freshmen?
Yeah, and I think that's something you have to weigh. And it seems pretty clear that UNLV didn't prioritize him as a player, and whether they wanted him or not, it's tough to say because, you know, Marvin Menzies isn't going to trash him. You're not going to ask Marvin Menzies, why didn't you bring him in? And he's not going to say, no, we thought he sucked.
We didn't want him.
We talked to him. We thought he wanted to go closer to home.
Right.
And that was it.
But he's not going to say, we didn't want him.
Yeah. No, there's no chance.
Top story.
Number one.
Vegas Golden Knights, bad loss over the weekend. Bad because they were out to a lead. Crumbled in the final 6 minutes. What was more embarrassing? The UNLV defense or Fleury on the goal that Columbus scored to make it 2-2.
It wasn't a good one. I mean, I think the UNLV 3-point defense was more embarrassing. But I think visually for those couple of seconds, it was certainly kind of a joke with Fleury trying to scramble back to the net, took a weird bounce off the boards as he was trying to play the puck. And it's something he's dealt with earlier in his career. He's cleaned up a lot of that. And you know, especially here in Vegas.
I think it was just the image of him just throwing the stick in the air just sprawling,
hoping to dive back into the
trying to make a save with his non-glove hand, and it just was not going to happen. I mean, it was a wide open net because of the bounce.
But I think there was a degree of that getting to him a little bit. First of all, the Golden Knights played horrific in the second period. It was one of the worst periods they played all year. They only gave up the one goal. They went in leading 2-1. They ended the period down 2-2, and the only goal was off that kind of disastrous misplay by Fleury. But just overall as a team, they only got 3 shots on goal. They didn't have a whole lot of energy. There was no bounce at all. And even though they gave up 2 goals late to lose, it was that second period that all the players were talking about after the game and that Gerard Gallant was talking about where they really let the game get away from them. But I think that Fleury mishap may have played into them losing the game in general because they were up 3-2 late in the third period. Fleury let in kind of a soft goal on the third one where he wanted, you know, it was a rebound, a really good individual effort by Cam Atkinson, but Fleury allowed a rebound and then he scored on it. And then a couple minutes later, Atkinson scores again on the power play. And I think those are both shots. And, you know, Fleury told me after the game, those are both shots that I want to have back. I can't let those go in. And I think part of that was just kind of, you know, still letting that first goal impact him.
I like Fleury after the games. When he loses, man, he takes it seriously. He again, looked like he was going to start weeping. That's how mad he gets.
He was close. He was close when I was talking to him. And,
that's great. I love that from a competitor.
Can I also say that he went to a meet and greet after the game? I don't know that this is out
after
there
that game, really?
Yeah, he went to a meet and greet to apologize to the fans for losing.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
When I heard about that and, you know, I was pretty stunned because I had just talked to him, like I said, and he was so down and so frustrated with himself and annoyed. And I was like, man, if this was me, I'd be...
There's no way.
Storming out of here, furious, angry, breaking things. He calmed down, went across the hall to a meet and greet. I think there was a fan that had just lost their father. And he went over and did it and then went to the other fans that were there to take it upon himself to apologize to them for what happened.
Get on down here to Ethel M. Chocolates. Valentine's week. They've got the Lights of Love display in the Cactus Garden. That's going to be open from all the way until the 16th. It's open until 10 o'clock nightly. So is the shop here. So the shop opens at 8 in the morning. No excuse. Oh, I have to go to work in the morning. I can't get my lady or guy something. No. Cut it out. 8 o'clock in the morning and then late night all the way through the 16th until 10 p. They've got a brand new product this year, the 5-piece Remy Martin XO Cognac Truffle made with Remy Martin XO. Cognac Truffles sold in a 5-piece box for just $15, and you can also take advantage of the tasting experience that runs all the way through. Well, it runs all year, but hours are going to be extended through the 16th from 10 a to 8 p to book it. ethelm.com/tasting experience.
Hit up Cofield and Company on Facebook, like ESPN Las Vegas.
York Schrannel winded down, kicked out in front, and Panarin scores into a wide open net. A Marc-Andre Fleury, the victim of a bad bounce right off the end boards, right by him.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I guess now it's time for me to give up.
Come on, Fleury, don't give up.
It's time.
Keep your chin up, buddy.
Got a picture of you beside me. Got your lipstick marks still on your coffee cup. Oh, yeah.
We love you, buddy. Don't cry after the games. We love you.
Got a fist of pure emotion. Got a head of shattered dreams.
That's a bad goal.
Gotta leave it. Gotta leave it all behind now.
No reason to get so emotional. Crank it up.
Whatever I said, whatever I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good.
You still love him, right? He doesn't have to sing like this for the fans to come back. It's not that cheesy because it's Valentine's week.
I think he'd be singing in French.
Possibly. But you said he was on the verge of tears after the game on Saturday. He really takes things hard. I freaking love it.
He was
great.
Not happy. But he also spoke. Like, I think there's players in the league that wouldn't talk after a game like that.
And you would have driven home and had this song on in the car and just been bellowing.
Oh, I definitely would have punched a locker.
Yes.
No question.
But he gets to bounce back tomorrow and Thursday. It'll be okay.
Regular season game.
Ethel M. Chocolates here on this Monday. It's Valentine's week. We know Soren Petro loves Valentine's Day. I'm sure he's got special plans for all the ladies in his life. Petro, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm good. Will you play Take That at some point this week to be in the V-Day spirit?
Be in the Valentine's Day spirit or what?
Yes!
What was that?
Yes.
Why,
yes.
Play Take That? What the hell
yes.
is that?
Yes. The breakups, happy times, all these things happen, my friend.
Is that the name of that song?
Yes, it is. Well, it's the name of the group.
Oh, okay. No, it's probably not happening. Listen, I got two kids. I got gray hair. I'm fat. I'm old. My wife has given up any thoughts of any kind of great romance happening on Valentine's Day.
It's all over. It's all over. All right. So you were, I think, off the air by the time the Kareem Hunt news came down, right? Or were you still on? I wonder what is Kansas City's reaction going to be to Kareem Hunt now signing back in the NFL with the Browns?
Yeah. So no, I was on the air. So thanks for your excellent math skills for figuring out the whole 2-hour time difference. It's not like it's the Olympics in Beijing or something, Steve.
Well, I woke up at 2:30 Pacific, so I had no idea what was going on today. How I show prep.
Yeah, I know how you like to get after it. I was on. I'm stunned. I'm stunned at the Cleveland Browns. I'm not stunned he's back in the NFL. I think there's always somebody. First of all, I think anybody deserves a second chance. I don't begrudge that. I don't know that everybody has to give the second chance, right? That's always the thing. You don't think the guy deserves a second chance? Well, of course I think he deserves a second chance. I just don't know that it has to be my team that gives it to him. I'll tell you, I think there was no way he was ever going to play for the Kansas City Chiefs again. And if you'd asked me to pick one other team he's not going to play for, I would have assumed it would be the Cleveland Browns. I go back to the town where a lot of the problems he's had, and I spoke with people in Cleveland in the weeks after the incident became public, and they said, hey, we're starting to get a lot of word that there are a lot of other incidents that didn't make it all the way to the police level or video level. And so to go back in what was clearly not a positive surrounding and make that his permanent surrounding, a lot of guys, I talked to one, scout, former general manager who told me, listen, one of the things you do in situations like this is you don't take a guy who's had problems in his hometown. You got a chance to make it work when he gets away from the hometown. And by all accounts, I spoke with him, said, he was the model citizen when he was in Kansas City, and that their fear really came for when he went home. And so for John Dorsey to go down this road, I don't know what the man is thinking. And I like John, and I think he's a tremendous talent evaluator, but this is one of the things that got him fired in Kansas City, was taking too many character risks. And I don't know why, with Nick Chubb already on the roster and running backs being so disposable, he's making this move.
So I guess my follow-up question was, since it's John Dorsey, do you have confidence that he knows enough about the situation that everything would be okay? But it sounds like that is really not where you're going.
No chance. I mean, this is a guy that brought in Marcus Peters. Who has not had any trouble with the law, to make clear. There's a big separation between Marcus Peters and his behavior, throwing around F-bombs and everything every time a camera comes around, and just being an all-around jerk anytime. There's a lot of him going after a coach on the bus, or he's getting into an altercation with Dave Tobe after the Jet game that he got that he thought he was thrown out of, and then came back out on with no shoes and socks. But he choked a coach at Washington. And the Chiefs took the risk and took him at 17. They had one good year, and the behavior got progressively worse and worse, which is what I expect to happen this year with the Rams, on his best behavior year one, and then for it to start to deteriorate. Maybe the hope that, the need to get a contract, he'll keep it together. But that was a big risk. Kareem Hunt was a risk. I think the Chiefs knew a lot more. There's a lot more there in the background. Certainly the family background of problems and violence with the father certainly came to light later. I think they took too many characteristics. They've had a number of other guys that were brought in, or John Dorsey, that were things that haven't gone public, but that have been issues. And I know that the big thing that obviously the video is very damning. I think the Chiefs might actually have tried to stick it out with them, or at least they would have considered it had he not lied and said, no, we didn't do anything. And then you had Andy Reid and Clark Hunt making statements on camera at training camp about, you got to use better judgment and be around, the right people. They didn't really understand the gravity of the situation because they'd been told he hadn't hit anyone, he hadn't done anything. He was just, it was things going on around his friends. So, bringing players in like that, was a real problem with the Chiefs. He's also not that great with the salary cap, to be honest with you. And the Chiefs are still digging out of the holes that he dug for him with some of the older players. But, he just routinely did not make character an issue. I know Michael Lombardi was quoted, a few days ago saying, look, John Dorsey's a guy who doesn't care a lot about character. And then as soon as he signed Kareem Hunt, he said, see what I wrote. Now, Michael Lombardi rubs a lot of people the wrong way in the NFL, but he's a former personnel director. And he called out John Dorsey for not caring enough about character. And that's one of the big things that's out there on him in the NFL. And I would think, now listen, if any organizational screw up a firing, it's obviously the Browns. But if he has another, if he has a domestic violence issue, an assault against a woman in Cleveland, I would think that John Dorsey would lose his job with the Browns, and furthermore would never be a general manager again if it happens. But who knows? I mean, Kareem Hunt's got a job, and a guy who had a silent, peaceful protest does not. So go figure.
What do you make of Kareem Hunt going to a team where there's already an established young running back there? Is this just he had no other offers, or does he just want to go home? It seemed like a weird fit above everything else.
I think it's the only guy that would sign him. I think it can be the only thing. Listen, Kareem Hunt went on TV with ESPN on that Sunday morning after the story broke on a Friday, and he was released by the Chiefs that Friday night, or I think it was Friday. It might have been Thursday, but I think it was a Friday night. And then Sunday, he's on camera on pregame show with ESPN telling his apology. He really thought he was going to apologize, and then everyone's going to go, oh, we're sorry. Okay, well, yeah, then here's a four-year contract offer. I mean, I think he and his agent were really stunned to think that he wasn't just picked up immediately. I think the guy is desperate to get into the NFL, which may be a true sign of remorse, and he recognizes what he lost and he wants to get it back and prove himself, or it might be just a guy who doesn't understand at all what he did and thinks, hey, this is no big deal. Where's my football job? So, you know, I think the Browns, I think he's been feeling like, you know, he wanted back in, wanted to sign immediately, and I think the Browns are just the first team to finally give him an opportunity. I think everybody else had been staying away, and no, it doesn't make any sense for a young football team that is trying to build with character. And I know that's one of the ways that he got sideways, I believe. And no one's told me this directly, but you connect the dots with different things that are said to you. I think it's one of the ways he got sideways with Andy Reid. Andy Reid is big on character. I know for one thing, if you lie to Andy Reid, you're gone. And I'm sure Andy Reid, that was one of the big things about it. He expects everything to be kept in-house, be team first, but to be honest. And I think he believes that that's one of the pillars that you build the structure of good chemistry on a football team, and Kareem Hunt, you know, blew that up, and I think John Dorsey routinely was bringing up players that didn't live up to the kind of code of ethics that he wanted, and I think that was a big part of why John Dorsey's not the general manager of the Chiefs. I mean, when he was let go, the Kansas City Chiefs had been to the playoffs four times in 5 years, and were defending division champs. So, and it just made a massive move to go up and get their quarterback. So. You clearly did something really, really wrong to lose your job, and I think you're seeing it exposed as to what it was now in Cleveland.
Kansas City radio star Soren Petro from WHB is on the horn with Cofield and Company. Let's turn our attention to something not as serious, or maybe it is. How big a deal was it last week with Pat Mahomes playing basketball? Did the Chiefs come out publicly, or at least behind the scenes, and say, you know what, let's not hoop it up in the offseason, Pat?
So, you know, that actually happened on my airwaves. Thanks again for listening, Steve. I appreciate it. the comments there from Brett Peach, the general manager, was my kind of little, you know, season wrap-up with him that I do every year. I used to do it with John Dorsey, and now I do it with Brett Peach. And I get ready. I bring him on. You know, general manager of the Chiefs, you know, great, successful season. You know, Brett, congratulations on the year. And he said, well, first of all, let me say something to the Chiefs Kingdom. Patrick Mahomes will not be playing basketball anymore. I have heard your response, and we have talked with Patrick, and he was joking and he was laughing around, but he was also serious, and it was a very lighthearted way in which he went about saying it. And he's like, you know, listen, we called up Patrick and said, look, I see you breaking some ankles there on the opponents. We want to make sure you're not breaking your ankle. And he said, you know, Patrick said he was, you know, kind of just shooting around, and then it just got a little more competitive. And he said, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, about Patrick is he's just so competitive he can't help himself. So, you know, we just talked about it. Those are things you can't be doing. It's standard in a contract that you can't do those things. I know there were some people, Richard Sherman was suddenly outraged by it. You know, it's in Patrick Mahomes' contract not to do it. The Chiefs were not dropping the hammer on him, and Patrick Mahomes was in agreement. Now, I'll say this. I don't for a second buy that they were just shooting around. It's clearly 5-on-5. Tyreek Hill, by the way, somebody should call Drew Rosenhaus as well, because he's down at the other end of the floor, obviously playing on the same team. Somebody might want to talk to Drew Rosenhaus about him being out there. But yeah, I mean, the Chiefs definitely don't want him playing basketball. They don't want him getting hurt. The whole city wants to put him in a glass jar and make sure that, you know, nobody even breathes on him until it's time to start playing football again. I mean, there was a level of, oh, whatever he wants, we love him. You know, the guy who wants to kiss his ass and thinks he's going to get an autograph or maybe an invite to dinner if he says how great he is, that guy was, you know, somehow like the organization's out of line. Everybody else is like, no, they're not. We've never had a player like this, and we don't want him hurt goofing around playing pickup basketball at the local fatty gym. So, you know, I look, they're on the same page. Mahomes and the Chiefs have a great relationship. I talked to Lee Steinberg at the Super Bowl, who's his agent, and, you know, there's a very good relationship there. He loves playing for Andy Reid. He really just follows every direction Andy Reid gives him, and so I think a much bigger deal was made of it. I was actually kind of shocked at how big a deal it ended up being with a lot of people, because it is pretty much just standard procedure. Listen, how many times, who buys that Moise Alou fell off a treadmill? You know, all these injuries. Who drove John Wood was at his house? Hey, come on. Listen, you assume that either somebody's drunk or doing something that it says in their contract that they shouldn't have been doing. I'm 47 and an unathletic putz. I've never fallen down the stairs, yet I can probably find five different athletes that claim to be hurt falling down the stairs. How do the most athletic, coordinated individuals in the world constantly have injuries that my toad ass never has?
Right.
Come on. You're either drunk or you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. And the teams are simply nipping it in the bud. I don't get why it is such a big deal.
Petro, we're up against it. We want to get you on soon, though, because we want to start looking at the draft and how Casey fixes this defense. So thank you for the time.
Yeah, it starts with Spagnuolo. Anytime, boys. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Saran Petro, WHB in Kansas City. Yeah, came over the top on me. I was trying to defend John Dorsey in hour one, and Adam Hill said Dorsey has a record of continuing to take risk on character, and he's done it again in Cleveland by signing Kareem Hunt. Hope it works out for Dorsey.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company's.
You want it? Check it out.
Grab bag.
Smells like fish in here.
Hey, don't touch that. That's nothing to play with, man.
On ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Less than 10 minutes away from a special edition of the Marvin Menzies radio show going down at the Orleans inside Bailiwick. So stick around or get over to the Orleans, and highly recommend getting out there. I know people have a lot of concerns, questions, queries about UNLV basketball. Ask the coach yourself.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
We'll talk to you.
He likes questions.
He does.
He is chatty. So head over to the Orleans, Marvin Menzies radio show, coming up here on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM at 6 o'clock.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Good spot tomorrow. I'm not sure what to expect. Eric Winalda is coming on the Bischoff show at 10 a.m. I saw some back and forth between Winalda and Bischoff. Is it safe to say every coach in town hates Tyler?
I think some of them are
hates
coming
is strong.
Around.
Hates is a very strong word.
I don't think
he can be misunderstood at times.
Yeah, I don't think Gallant even acknowledges him yet.
Okay.
And I don't think Gruden knows him yet.
Well, he's not in town yet.
But I think anybody that knows him hates him, and I don't think that just applies to coaches. I think that's anyone.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So Tyler's been very big on. He's been super intense about the lights roster, and he tried to drop it on me at some point like a month ago, and I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I don't. Do you? You know, lots of people who go to the games.
I go to the games.
Right, but you have friends who bought season tickets.
Oh yeah.
And I have friends who bought season tickets. I'm not sure that the lights are about the roster and who's playing.
No, it's about going and having fun and watching.
I mean, you'd like to see him win, but it's more the experience. But he's very stuck on who's on the team. So I guess he's said this, and Winalda's heard it or seen him tweet it. So Winalda was at the UNLV game, and he goes, so I'm at your hang at Tyler Bischoff, and I don't know one of these guys. Using your logic, should I just leave?
That's great.
It is actually cool.
Perfect.
That the coach is now busting Bischoff's chops.
Oh, it's awesome. That shows that Tyler is doing his job.
Now, that said, is UNLV basketball different than Lights FC?
Sure. And I would say that if you don't know one of the UNLV players, that's kind of on you.
Now, that said, I think there are fans who are like, I want more people I know on the team. Now, Marvin Menzies is trying to fix that by having 3- and 4-year players on the team. But then there's also this discussion we've been going round and round on, like, oh, they need more top, 20 recruits. I need to know them.
For the soccer, it's insane, though, because you saw last year Freddie Adu was on the roster and he didn't even play.
Right.
Like, is that what you want? You want guys that aren't good enough to be on the team, but hey, they have a name I recognize, so that's cool. Like, I don't understand what you would want in that scenario. I want whoever the best players they could get are and throw them out on the field. Like I said, I follow soccer not super closely, but closely enough. And there's a couple guys that, you're familiar with, and then as the season went on, you really got familiar with guys. But I'm just out there to watch, good games and hopefully be competitive and get some wins every once in a while. That's nice.
Back in there.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Oh, I just looked outside here at Ethel M. That is fabulous.
You had no idea what you were getting into. It's great.
Yeah, the cactus garden illuminated nightly from 4:45 to 10 o'clock. Now that it's dark, woo, look at those lights. That is really cool. Lights of Love display here. It's going to be open all the way through the 16th. Got more than a half a million lights out there. Now, when you come in, they've got brand new products like the five-piece Remy Martin XO Cognac Truffle. That is sold in a five-piece box for just $15. Chrissy, all I need is a 10. Thank you. Appreciate it. You got great items like the Valentine's Day Best Friend XO boxes sold in four-piece pairs for $15. They got the fresh-dipped chocolate-covered strawberries for sale. The store here is open extended hours until 10 o'clock at night, 8 a. to 10 p. all the way through the 16th, and then maybe the coolest thing, reservations for the tasting room. You want to do that on Valentine's Day. You want to do it any day, but Valentine's Day especially, $15 a person, $25 for the chocolate, and wine tasting. Make your reservation at ethelm.com, tasting experience.
Definitely do that. And come out here anytime. Check it out. It's great.
I didn't know you've been here so many times.
Oh, yeah.
Very jealous of you. Very jealous.
Yeah. Well, now you have a chance to.
Marvin Menzies' radio show is on the way, live from New Orleans. We'll see you tomorrow at the Thomas and Mack.